Welcome to Capital Link's company presentation series.
I am Paul Amputis at Capital Link. Welcome back to the 2026 Capital Link Company Presentation Series. As a reminder, this series, company management, highlights the company's current operations, business development, growth prospects, and sector outlook. We are pleased to have with us today the CEO of D'Amico International Shipping, Mr. Carlos Balestra de Mottola. D'Amico International Shipping is a leading international marine transportation company operating in the product tanker market, comprising of vessels that typically carry refined petroleum products, chemical and vegetable oils. The company shares are listed on the Milan Stock Exchange under the ticker symbol DIS.MI and are also traded on the OTCQX Best Market in the US under the ticker symbol DMCOF. Please note that participants can submit their questions through the Q&A button on your screen during the webinar. Your questions will be answered during the Q&A session. Before we begin our webinar, kindly note that this discussion is strictly for informational and educational purposes and should not be relied upon. The webinar does not constitute an offer to buy or sell securities or investment advice or advice of any kind, and Capital Link bears no responsibility for the content. Let us now begin with our discussion. I'd like now to pass the floor over to Mr. Carlos de Mottola. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Paul, for the introduction, and thank you for hosting me today. And good afternoon or good morning, depending on where you are. We'll go straight over then to the presentation. We have quite a few slides to present today. Some I will go through quite quickly, but they might be useful later for the Q&A session, depending on the questions that we will be receiving. So, going forward, I'll skip the executive summary. Just quickly, our fleet today, we control 29 vessels on the water, all product tankers, mostly MR2s, but we have an equal presence today on the LR1 and the Handysize segments. So overall, 29 vessels, mostly owned 27 of these 29 vessels. Still a young fleet, an average age of 9.6 years, especially if compared with the industry average age, which is of almost 15 for the MRs and around 16 for the LR1s. Mostly eco-design, 93%. And we have also recently ordered some vessels. So we have ordered four LR1 vessels last year. Well, actually in 24, and at the end of last year we ordered two Handysize vessels, and then this year we announced the order of two MR2 vessels. All of these vessels are going to be built in China at very renowned yards, and they are very efficient vessels, so we are glad they're going to be joining our fleet soon. And increasing the competitiveness of our fleet. We have a very strong balance sheet today. The ratio between the net financial position and our fleet market value at the end of September was of around 7%. And vessel values have been firming up since then. We have also been generating substantial amounts of cash in the meantime. So I would actually expect this ratio to be even lower as at 31st of December. We had a very good year in the first 9 months of 25. Our net profits were of 63 million. We have the year was characterized by a gradually improving market. So Q3 was the strongest quarter of last year in the first 9 months. And Q4, we still haven't announced our Q4 results. We expect to be even stronger than Q3 was. Going on to the following slide here, we see clearly how the spot market has improved throughout the year. And we see that the average for the spot market that we achieved on the spot market in Q1 was of $21,000, around 21, and then 24,500 in Q2, and 25,500 in Q3. And this was these are the figures we provided to the market when we approved our Q3 results. So this is not updated. But at that time, beginning of November, the average fixtures for our spot vessels in Q4 was of around 28,000, almost $300 per day, and the remaining 3 days were also fixed at very good levels because the year ended in a very good note. And so that is why we expect Q4 results to be even stronger than those we achieved in Q3. And so now we go on to the strategic priorities and the market overview. As I just mentioned, we have been active recently ordering some new builds. And four LR1s ordered in 24, and two MR1s ordered at the end of last year, and two MR2s ordered at the beginning of this year, for a total investment of almost $419 million, of which still to be paid to the yards. Of $374 million, so it is quite a substantial amount, but we are glad we are making these investments. We realize these vessels are not coming cheap. We are not at buying at the bottom of the market like we did in the last time we ordered vessels. Starting in 2012, but these vessels are going to be very efficient, and it is important that we order these vessels to maintain an important presence in the market and to continue controlling a modern and efficient fleet. Going on to the following slide. Here, we still have a few options on lease vessels that we haven't exercised. We exercised most of them, as you see from the list of vessels appearing on the left-hand side. But there is still the High Fidelity and Discovery that can be exercised. These are cheap financings and long financings, which end in September 32. So we are not in a hurry to exercise these options. Interest rates have been taking longer than anticipated to come down, and these are fixed rate transactions, so it is still not attractive for us to exercise these options. But if interest rates do come down further in the course of this year, then a window might open up for us to exercise these options later this year. So we keep watching these opportunities to strike at the right moment. In terms of purchase options on time chartered in vessels, we have exercised all the options we had. We did so at very attractive prices that were well below the vessel's market value at the time these options were exercised. Valuing these as at 30th of September, the value creation is slightly lower than at the time of exercise, but still substantial, around $46 million. And since then, vessel values have actually firmed up slightly. So this This delta should actually have increased in the last quarter of the year. We have a good level of contract coverage for 2026. We have 42% of our contract days covered through fixed rate contracts at very profitable rates, around an average of around 23,300. And we have 16% of 2027 available vessel days covered at an average rate of 22,200. So we might increase our coverage slightly for both years. And there are many opportunities to do so right now. There's a lot of interest from charterers to take vessels on time on time charter. So we have a fleet which is increasingly competitive, increasingly eco, as we see on the graph at the bottom of the page. We end the year with a fleet which is 93% eco, and this percentage could rise further in the coming years as the new vessels ordered are delivered to us. Markets, as I was just mentioning, have been firming up in Q4 and in the beginning of this year. We see on the left the spot earnings and the 1 year TC rate, which have been moving up. And on the right-hand side, we also see the asset values, which have been moving up, both 5-year-old and 10-year-old vessels. And to a lesser extent, also new building prices. So the Eco MRs today, the 1 year TC rate is above $23,000 per day. And for the LR1, Eco LR1 vessel, I would say above $28,000 per day. So very, very good levels, very profitable levels for us. Going on to the geopolitical factors which have been affecting the market, well, the main one and the one we have been which has been affecting the market since 2022 is the Ukrainian war and the associated sanctions then imposed on Russia. And how that has led to a rerouting of Russian exports to more distant locations, contributing to a substantial increase in ton miles. What we have been seeing also is that these sanctions are becoming stricter, have become stricter over time, more vessels being sanctioned and sanctions being imposed in a more stricter fashion. And also, we have seen an escalation of attacks by the Ukrainians in on oil facilities in Russia. Both of these factors has led to a gradual decline in Russian exports, which have proven resilient nonetheless, but they have been declining. Surprisingly, there was actually an uptick in exports in November and December. And this is due to the end of maintenance of Russian refineries and also the well-oiled practices adopted by Russian counterparties to circumvent sanctions, which allowed them to sustain these exports. The other major factor which impacted the market in a very important way in the first 9 months of 24 was the attacks by Houthis on vessels transiting the Bab el-Mandeb Strait and the rerouting of traffic which was caused by that. Around the Cape of Good Hope. So much longer vessels having to sail a much longer distance. Depending on the departure port and the arrival port, the average sailing distance is increased by between around 30 and almost 70%. And in the strong market we were in the first 9 months of 24, where refining margins were very strong. This the additional costs of having to sail these longer distances were absorbed by the market, and the product continued flowing from east to west, but sailing the longer distance, and that was created a very strong market with freight rates at record levels. However, in the last quarter of 24 and then in 25, for most of 25, refining margins were much weaker. And during most of that time, arbitrages were not as attractive on these longer routes. So, product, the volumes transported on this route fell, and even when measured on a ton days basis, which is what we do on the graph on the right hand side on the top, there was a decline in ton days. So we see that the yellow horizontal line representing ton days in the first 9 months of 24, which is substantially higher than in 23. But then this decline in the last quarter of 24, as shown by the horizontal green line, and the further decline since then in 25, as shown by the horizontal gray line, which is represents the average ton days for 2025. So I would actually say that this factor here, this disruption to trade was very positive initially, but potentially slightly negative for the market later. So, despite the increase in transits that we are seeing now through Suez, the market has been had stayed at very strong levels, and I do not anticipate a negative effect on the market arising as a result of a normalization of transits through Suez, if this were to happen, because it is very uncertain whether this trend, normalization trend, will continue going forward. Another important factor is not only the ton days decline, but the volumes which were transported around the Cape of Good Hope were not always transported on coated tankers. There was a large portion transported on uncoated vessels, and it was not only new builds, as occasionally had happened in the past. It was also vessels cleaning up to transport clean products. This was very unusual, and the share transported by uncoated vessels rose to 12% in Q3 24. But it has since declined. It is volatile indicator, but it is at around only 2% right now. So this is something that, especially given the very strong dirty markets we are seeing right now, we expect it to be less of an issue going forward. But we do expect that new builds, and there are a good number of vessels that are going to be delivered during the course of this year, might transport occasionally clean petroleum products on their maiden voyages. So this will continue dampening the clean markets, which otherwise would be even stronger. And then we have a new geopolitical disruption here, linked to Venezuela. Well, this could eventually lead to a normalization of this market. So Venezuela was subject to very tough sanctions during a long period, an economy which was very badly managed during a long period, and what was once a oil superpower, which produced over 3 million barrels per day of oil, faced a sharp drop in production. which as of 2025 was of only around 1 million barrels per day. The potential removal of sanctions on Venezuela could lead to the sanctioned barrels moving to compliant tonnage. So increasing the demand for these vessels, and this would be positive for the market, in particular for Aframax vessels, which are very suited for that trade. Longer term, of course, Venezuela has the biggest oil reserves in the world, so it could produce substantially more than it is producing today. But that would require also big investments, which the foreign oil companies might not be willing to make unless they receive guarantees that their interests in the country will be protected because they have had very bad experiences in the past. Of course, if this were to happen and it were to become a major exporter, that could provide a further boost to the market. In any event, even just the return of these barrels to the compliant market should be positive. As I mentioned, firstly for the dirty trades, for the Aframaxes, but of course through the linkages that there are through LR2s, also for the clean markets. And Venezuela produces also very heavy oil, which needs diluents for it to be transported. One of these diluents is naphtha, and a lot of that naphtha should be coming from the US. The infrastructure, also the port infrastructure in Venezuela, is likely to be very inefficient initially, so that will also absorb a lot of tonnage if these trades develop, and that should also be positive for the market. Going forward, we see how the sanctioned oil and water has been rising very fast, so the sanction barrels have continued moving, but they are taking much longer to discharge, and that is keeping more vessels occupied, tightening the supply of vessels in the market. And you have also an increasing number of vessels sanctioned. You have today 16% of the tanker fleet in deadweight terms, which is sanctioned. Some segments, like the Aframax segment, you have 30% of the fleet, which is sanctioned, so a very high percentage. Throughputs continue rising. Oil demand continues rising, not at a very fast pace, but still at a good pace, I would say. There's an acceleration in oil demand, a growth expected for next year from 0.85 million barrels per day this year to just over 0.9 million, and refining throughputs should be rising next year by 0.9 million barrels per day. And what is important is that this throughput would be rising in non-OECD countries and mostly east of Suez. A lot of it then will be transported to OECD countries where refining throughputs are flat or in some cases falling. So the market was benefited from a very sharp increase in oil supply in 2025 of over 3 million barrels per day, mostly coming from non-OPEC countries, 1.8 million barrels per day. And a similar trend is expected this year with an increase in average oil supply of 2.5 million barrels per day. And still, the majority of the increase, 1.3 million barrels per day, coming from non-OPEC countries. So, and mostly from the Americas, so the US, Canada, Brazil, and Guyana. So, very good for ton miles. We have seen that onshore inventories are still pretty much aligned with historical averages in OECD countries, but oil at sea has been rising. not in the same extent as sanctioned oil at sea, which has been rising faster, but still it has been rising. Floating storage has been rising, but still well below where it was in 2020. So there is more scope for increase in floating storage. So the forward price curve is still backward dated on the front end, but then it moves into contango later. So there are some products where demand is rising quite fast, and for 2026, it is anticipated that gas oil and jet fuel are going to be the star performers in terms of demand increase. Another source of strength for the market has been the increase in naphtha imports by China. Volatile series, but the averages have been moving up. And this is a trend which is also expected to continue as China continues developing its petrochemical industry. Now, here we have one very important factor which has been supporting the markets, and it's the cleanup of the LR2 vessels. As anticipated, crude tanker market has been very strong this year. Even the VLs, which were lagging a bit behind, have done extremely well recently. That has created a positive spillover for the smaller vessels, Suezmax and Aframaxes. And Aframaxes are also performing extremely well. And they have been drawing a lot of LR2 vessels into dirty trades. As I mentioned, the Aframax fleet also is a large portion of the fleet is sanctioned, and that also has created a very tight market for these vessels, which also explains this move of LR2 vessels into the clean trade. And at the end of last year, we saw that for the first time in a long while, the number of LR2s trading dirty was higher than the number of LR2s trading clean. And despite the LR2 fleet having grown by almost 50 vessels in 2025, we saw a contraction in the number of LR2 vessels trading clean last year, from 255 vessels at the beginning of the year to around 240 vessels at the beginning of 2026. On a more structural, longer term perspective, we have these refinery additions in the Middle East and in Asia, and refinery closures in Europe and in the US, which is also supporting the market. And the fleet continues aging rapidly. It is important to note here that at the end of 24, if you look only at MRs and LR1s, you had an order book which was at 15.6%. An order book which was at 15.6%, and just over 16% of the fleet instead, which had more than 20 years of age. But by the end of 25, we had almost 20% of the fleet which was more than 20 years, and the order book had fallen to 13.5%. And this is a trend we expect to continue in the coming years. So the order book has started to contract for these type of vessels, but the fleet is aging very rapidly, and this is a very promising indicator for the market going forward. And in the bottom, we see that there's a growing number of vessels in the coming years which will be reaching 25 years of age. In 2028, almost 4% of the product tanker fleet will reach 25 years of age, and then that rises to 5.5%. Sorry, this is only for MRs and LR1s. Of that fleet, which reaches 25 years of age. There is, however, nonetheless, an acceleration in deliveries in the course of 25, and there was in the course of 25, and there is in the course of 26. And we have seen demolitions are still at very low levels, although they did increase slightly throughout 2025. So there's ample scope for more demolition. not as many product tankers ordered last year in the MR and LR1 segments, only 74 after over 200 vessels having been ordered in 2024. And that explains why the order book started declining last year for these segments. And if we look at the fleet growth in the MR and LR1 segments for 26, it is anticipated to be of around 4%, but across all tankers, which is the most important statistic, it's of only 3.5%, even assuming very little demolition this year. So I would say this is something the market should manage to absorb and bodes well for the market also in 2026. So with that, I covered the main slides of the presentation, and I would like to pass it over to the Q&A session. Okay, so we have quite a lot of questions here. So one is asking about wind-assisted propulsion. Yes, we are looking at wind-assisted propulsion for our new builds. We have an external consultant which is looking at the different routes our vessels trade in, and to try and assess the potential savings from different configurations that we could adopt for our vessels for these WASPs, and before we decide whether we want to make this investment or not. The savings look interesting. They are not cheap to install, but if the IMO's midterm measures had been approved last year, the payback period would have probably been much faster. Without these, the attractiveness of installing these systems might not be as big, but it could still be convenient for us to do so. So we are still assessing whether to do so, but hopefully soon we will be able to make a decision in this respect. Another question here. So, following your recent MR1 and MR2 new build orders and vessel sales, how should vessels think about this capital allocation priorities and fleet renewal strategy? Good question. Yes, we, as I was just presented right now, we have ordered 8 new buildings, so for a total investment of almost $420 million. We have a very strong balance sheet. However, as I mentioned, the ratio as at 30th of September between our net financial position and our fleet market value was only of 7%. So we do have the financial strength to make these investments. We have also been selling some of our older vessels, and there are two vessels which are still non-eco in our fleet and which we are likely to sell by the end of this year, beginning of next year, which will also help fund our new building program. And therefore, we believe we will be able to continue rewarding our shareholders also with generous dividends. Our payout ratio out of the 2024 results was of 40%, including dividends and buybacks. And we expect to be able to confirm this ratio this payout ratio also out of the 2025 results. We might order more new builds, but are in the future. But our strategy is not to increase our fleet. It is rather to keep a stable fleet at this stage, and any vessels which we might order would be replacing all the vessels which we would be selling in the meantime. Another question here. The MR1 and MR2 vessels are expected to deliver lower fuel consumption. How important is efficiency in today's chartering environment? Okay. Yeah, no, it's true. These vessels that we are ordering, we could claim they are super eco vessels. They are even more efficient than the eco vessels that were delivered to us between 2014 and 2019. The MR2 vessels that we just ordered, the savings are of around 17% fuel savings relative to our existing eco vessels on the water. And for the MR1 vessels, it's of around 20% fuel savings. And they also have a better cubic. So we can transport more cargo than we can with our existing MR1. So very competitive vessels. Chinese yards, the quality has improved substantially. When we last ordered vessels, we did so in Korea and in Vietnam in a yard controlled by a Korean shipyard. We did not feel comfortable ordering China, but this has changed now because we have seen a very big improvement in the quality of Chinese vessels. The premiums that you can obtain even in today's not very high fuel oil price environment is of around $1,500 per day on a TC equivalent basis. If you employ a vessel on time charter, between an eco and a conventional vessel, and between a super eco, those that will be delivered to us from next year, and the next year it's the LR1s, but the MRs, the MR2s, and it's only 2029, so these figures are for MR2s. For an MR2 super eco, you have another $1,000 benefit relative to a let's say a normal eco vessel. So there are substantial premium for these vessels, which especially in a normalized market where the profit margins are not as spectacular as they are today, can make the difference. So another good question here. As environmental and regulatory requirements tighten, how do your methanol-ready and biofuel-capable vessels position this for the years ahead? Well, they are only methanol-ready because we prefer to take a wait and see stance with respect to this fuel capability. It might still develop into a viable alternative for our vessels, but right now it is very difficult to establish by when that will happen. And so we are not willing to make the additional investment to have a fully fledged dual fuel methanol vessel. So the investment we need to have a methanol ready vessel is very limited, but it provides us the flexibility to, at a later stage, decide to make the additional required investment to be able to burn also this fuel. However, biofuels, they are a reality, and they could be a very attractive solution short term, as a which doesn't require additional investments and can be used already on the vessels on the water. HVO in particular can be a very stable fuel and reliable fuel. So if it is produced at scale, it could be one way of meeting the fuel EU requirements as they become more stringent over time. Another question here. Looking forward, how are you balancing spot exposure versus time charters? Well, I think we covered this in the presentation. We have just over 40% coverage for this year. We are likely to increase this coverage to around 50% in the coming 2 3 months. And we will also slightly increase our coverage for 2027, which stands at around 16% today. But we are happy we have already a good level of coverage, and the market outlook is still very good for this year. So we're also happy to that we have some spot exposure currently, which will allow us to benefit from these very strong spot markets currently. Okay, then we have another question here, geopolitical nature. How could developments in Iran affect the product tanker market? That is a difficult one because it's very hard to forecast what will happen there. Change of regime there seems much more difficult than in Venezuela. Iran has, however, ramped up oil exports substantially over the last few years. When Trump was last president, oil exports out of the country were as low as 400,000 barrels per day. And they peaked last year at around 2 million barrels per day and have since declined to around 1.6 million barrels per day. So there is a lot of room for tougher sanctions being imposed on the country, which to curtail its exports. And this seems to be on the table, one of the options which the US is currently looking at right now. And this will be positive for the market, of course, because it would free up more space for non-sanctioned barrels to be transported on compliant tonnage. There is also the possibility of a conflict, an outright conflict, although that looks unlikely. And there we could have different scenarios which could unfold. Initially, there is the risk of retaliation by Iran, and especially if they are in a very difficult situation, they might decide to try to close the Strait of Hormuz. And that would be very potentially very negative for the market short term because that is a very important passageway through which 25% of all the oil transported by sea passes. But I think that such a scenario would lead to a very forceful reaction by the US, which would accelerate a change of regime and then eventually, might lead to the removal of sanctions on Iran, and which would then be positive again for the market. So a lot of scope for volatility, which might be positive for the market, creates some very strong spikes like we saw last year. when for the US attacked Iran for a very brief period. But it's definitely one situation to watch closely and very difficult to forecast at this stage. Another question here. Are you concerned about fleet growth in 2026 and 2027? Yes, to a certain extent, I am. I mean, there is definitely an acceleration in fleet growth, especially if scrapping stays at very low levels. I think that the most important figure is that for fleet growth for across all tanker sizes, as we have seen that there are very strong linkages between the non-coated and the coated sector. And there, the fleet growth is of 3.5%, which looks manageable. And it's even more manageable if you look at the fleet growth on the sub-20 fleet. So the sub-20 fleet growth across all tankers, it's of less than 1% in 2026. So a lot of vessels aging and crossing this 20-year threshold, and they start facing very strong limitations in what they can do. And their productivity falls quite significantly. So I think that because of that, and because of room for more vessels actually to be sanctioned during the course of this year, because as sanctions are being more forcefully applied, and we have seen vessel seizures now occurring more regularly, the productivity of the sanctioned vessels is going to fall further. It has already been low, but it's expected to fall further, creating a need for more vessels to move, which are not sanctioned today, to move into those trades. That happens through S&P transactions. And then these vessels will eventually also be sanctioned. So that would create a further tightening in the market. So this dynamic, which we have seen over the last few years, should continue, and should be supported for the market. And then, well, another big question here. Would a peace agreement between Ukraine and Russia be negative for the market? Yes, initially it will be, because there was a positive ton-mile effect, which analysts estimated to be around 7% as a result of the rerouting of sanctioned oil to more distant locations. A peace agreement doesn't necessarily entail a removal of sanctions by the EU. It might also entail a removal of sanction, but in a gradual fashion. So it might take quite a long time for these sanctions to be removed, even after peace agreement is reached. And even if they were removed altogether, even by the EU, this would eventually lead to an acceleration and demolition of vessels, which should have been demolished in some cases a long time ago. And in a weaker market, they would go straight to the brickyards. So it might take some time for the market to rebalance, a few years, but given the very old fleet profile we have, and that is getting older by the day, this shouldn't take that long. So it's not a source of very big concern, especially given the situation we have, the very strong contract coverage we have, the very strong balance sheet we have, and the very competitive fleet we have. Well, another question here: would a normalization of transits through Suez be negative for the market? I think I covered that in the presentation. Spent quite a lot of time on that slide. And then I think one last question: which factor could cause an even bigger rally in the market. I think that we haven't seen floating storage take off as it did in 2020. We have seen a sharp increase in sanctioned oil and water, but there is room for more floating storage if the forward oil price curve were to move into contango. Today, the forward price curve is being affected by the potential consequences of a conflict in Iran, which is keeping the front end higher than it would otherwise be. And that is why the curve is backwardated throughout most of 2026. But as we arrive towards the end of 26, we see this curve moving into contango. So if there is any sort of greater clarity in relation to the Iran situation, given the amount of oil which is being produced and the increase in oil supply which is expected for this year, it is very likely that this forward oil price curve, even the front end, will move into contango during the course of the year, and that this will spur floating storage. It will mean vessels will have an incentive to slow down. It will take more vessels out of the market, further tightening the market in an environment where the market is already very tight. So there is really in that scenario, there is a scope for freight rates to really go through the roof, potentially even higher than what we saw in 2024, in the first half of 2024. And I think with that, I think we can close the session. I think we went a bit over the time which had we had been allotted.
Carlos, thank you. That was actually wonderful. And thank you, everyone, for the questions that you submitted here today. Hopefully, we've answered most of your questions, all of the questions. If not, please feel free to reach out to Capital Link or to D'Amico directly. And again, want to thank everyone for taking the time for joining us today. This webinar will soon be available for access upon demand on Capital Link's website at capitallinkwebinars.com and our YouTube channel. Thank you, everyone, again. You may now disconnect.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Capital Link.
Thank you.
And thank you for everyone who joined today. Bye bye.